Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Wow.
Welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined this week by not Pig Donaldson. He's on holiday, he's off washing his moustache or hair, I don't know where he is, but I'll let him have the week off because this week we're joined by Norm from the YouTube channel Tokyo Lens, and he's here with me now. Hi, Norm.
How I'm doing? Doing pretty good, thanks for having me.
It's good to have you back. So last week on Wednesday, Norm and I hung out in Tokyo, and we're hanging out again. We talked a bit about your career, Norm. So Norm has a YouTube channel, Tokyo Lens, 150,000 subscribers. He's lived in Japan for over 10 years. He's a fluent speaker of Japanese. He's a master of shamisen, and he's just got lots of bloody good experiences to draw from, haven't you, Norm?
It's a good time.
It's a good time. So last week we heard about Norm's kind of story, why he came to Japan, why he started YouTube, how that's been going. This week we thought we'd kind of draw upon your experiences and actually kind of hear about some of the things you've done while travelling around Japan and when Japan eventually reopens and the concept of planes and travel and fun become a thing once again. Hopefully some of these ideas we're going to talk about in this episode you can actually go and see and visit when you get to Japan. What have you been doing today, though, Norm? How are you doing?
Oh, yeah, it's a pretty decent day. I actually just got back from some travels, so kind of putting together all the footage.
Where'd you go?
So I did Kyoto a few weeks ago, and then right after Kyoto, I hit up one of my favorite islands in Japan, being Shikoku, which I'm sure we'll get into later.
I haven't been to Kyoto this year, right? And it's been like the one place I want to go, and I actually am going in December, which I'm really looking forward to, but it must be like eerily quiet at the moment, given it's Japan's number one tourism hotspot. And
it was an amazing mix. The day I arrived in Kyoto, it was a holiday, and so you wouldn't have been really able to tell. Mind you, I haven't been there in 10 years, and 10 years ago it was moderately quiet. But got there and I was like, wow, this is not what I imagined. Everyone expected Kyoto to be dead, but couldn't drive. There were people everywhere.
Oh, wow.
And then the next day was back to a normal day and everything was empty. Philosopher's Path, nobody. Heian Jingu, nobody.
Wow.
Fushimi Inari, next to nobody, but still lots of people.
It seems like Japan's domestic tourism has made up a little bit for the absence of foreign tourists.
But especially during the koyo or fall leaves
season. Autumn season, right? Nice. So would you recommend going to Kyoto at the moment? Should I go down?
You've got nothing to lose.
It's
not going to be as crowded as it would have been like a year ago during this time. And I don't think you're going to be able to enjoy it like this.
Did you shoot any videos while you were down there?
I definitely did.
What have you got? Least.
I just dropped one about a night visit to Fushimi Inari.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. The Fushimi Inari Shrines. I think it's the place we actually hear, listeners want to go to the most in Kyoto. Yep. Something quite special about it.
It's so crowded usually.
Yeah. And you went at night.
Completely at night. Showed up at something like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning.
How are you not dead? How did you get, did you sleep during the day and then like go, or did you just start all night?
I actually just slept from maybe 7 p.m. till 2 a.m.
Okay.
I mean, it was enough. It was dark outside, you know, it counts. And it was a revenge trip, because in 2005 I had gone and I had that little Sony Handycam and it just couldn't pick it up at all. And as I was going down at night, it was getting dark and I was like, this would be an amazing experience. I want to capture it. And so this time I took a much better camera along with me to capture it at night so I could share that experience. Because I think a lot of people want the experience of it being empty. And I feel like that's one of the best ways to get it.
And what's the video called?
The video is Inside Kyoto's Mountain Shrine at Night. Fushimi Inari.
Very nice. I've never gone up at night. I've only gone up during the day, and as you say, it is pretty busy, or it was. Would love to go up, and your video was very nice, like seeing the kind of all the torii gates lit up, something kind of magical about it. Wasn't scary though? It's like wild boars and things.
There are wild boars. We could hear like monkeys screaming off in the distance. At one point, I didn't get him in the video. We had a gentleman hiding in an alcove in a corner, just like rustling a bag. He's like crouched. It was terrifying.
Oh my god.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't alone. I was with Victor from Frame of Travel, and the two of us were kind of talking fairly loud. And that keeps, like, bears and boars and all that away, too. Definitely. The human voice. So
a bear wouldn't dare take on both you and Victor Frame of Travel at the same time. No. That would be very dangerous indeed.
Climbing quietly, I think, would have had more risk.
Yes, yes. So. Yeah, whenever you go, like, mountaineering in Japan, you've got to take a little bell and ring that to notify bears. Fantastic. Well, I look forward to hearing more about that in a minute. Let's turn our attention, though, to Story of the Week. We've got a story here from Graham, who says, "Hello, gents. Hope you're both well. First of all, I want to say thanks. I moved from Northumberland in the UK to Osaka Prefecture in May 2019 for a two-year secondment from work." Wow, very lucky. Wow. I'd love to live in Osaka. It's like the coolest place in Japan, right?
Yeah, it's good food too.
Good food. I'm pretty envious whenever somebody tells me they've got to live there. Last year, I was lucky enough to go and see England smash the USA in Kobe in the Rugby World Cup. The whole experience was amazing, apart from one thing I've never lived down since. While I was on a very crowded train full of drunk, singing rugby fans, I noticed next to me a Japanese woman with her two young kids looking quite concerned by the crazy crowd around them. And I became quite worried that the kids might get crushed amongst the stampede of people. I put my arms up to hold onto the handrail in an attempt to give the family some space and hold the crowd back a bit. Ah, that's very noble. Very noble indeed, Graham. Unfortunately, my heroic effort was in vain when I accidentally elbowed the woman in the face while lifting my arm. Because my secondment came at only a few months' notice, I spoke almost no Japanese at the time, but I thought I could manage an apology. So I came up with, "Sumimasen, genki desu ka?" to which she awkwardly nodded. But I think she understood what I was trying to say. I explained this encounter to my Japanese colleagues, who burst into laughter and explained that not only had I elbowed her in the face and said, "Excuse me, how are you?" but "Genki desu ka?" is also the catchphrase of a famous Japanese wrestler. This harrowing tale has got me wondering if you've ever made any catastrophic errors while learning Japanese. Mine has haunted me to this day and has sort of become my catchphrase in the office. All the best, Graham. I mean, that's less a blunder of Japanese and more just a blunder of physical violence, Graham. Oh, dear. Have you ever done anything on that? What do you think? Yeah. Is that a bad thing?
It's not a good thing.
No.
You will survive there are much worse Japanese errors that you can make, much bigger social blunder in the grand scheme of things.
Example.
Oh, Lord. I don't know, being the guy, here's what Japanese people do this all the time as well. Being the guy who drunkenly drops his phone onto a crowded platform as it rolls in front of the train stop the Chuo line or something.
It's quite common, yeah.
Yeah, it is. And it's humiliating.
You haven't done it, have you?
No, I've been lucky enough to, I would stand back. But those kind of things, like that would be, you've just impacted the day of thousands of people. Maybe made people late for work or, you know, I don't know. But that would be pretty bad.
I can't think of any
Or falling in.
Don't fall on the railway lines. I don't think I can think of anything off the top of my head. Any catastrophic errors while learning Japanese? I mean, what you said, Genki desu ka? Mm. It's not too odd. It's just.
Yeah.
I don't know. What would you have said if you'd smashed a nice woman in the face on the train?
I just would have been like, oh, sumimasen. Daishibu desu ka? Like, are you okay?
Yeah, are you okay?
Yeah.
Was Genki's more formal and more.
Genki desu ka is like. It's that textbook, like,
how have you been, almost, right?
Yeah. How are you? How have you been?
Smash in the face. How have you been?
Yeah. There's. So, one of our first trips to Kyoto back in 2005, 2007, somewhere around there, I was with a friend who walked up to a woman in a geisha outfit and wanted to ask her, Shashin totemo ii desu ka? Can I take a picture?
Right.
And he asked me, how do you say it? So I said it back to him, Shashin totemo ii desu ka? And I don't know, it must have been like a game of telephone. He walks up to her and says, Sumimasen, Shinshin tatemo ii desu ka?
Oh my god, what?
Which translates much closer to, do you mind if I can't even say it.
You have to say it now. Cover your ears, young folks.
Yeah. What? Which translates to a really rough approach to, do you mind if I get an erection?
Oh, my Lord. And what did she do?
She just looked at him like he can't be saying. Luckily, I was within earshot.
He must have read like a funny Japanese phrase book and heard that phrase or something.
I ran up and I corrected. It wasn't. He said more like shishin, but it sounded close enough that she was like, did he just say what I think he just.
Oh, God.
I ran up and corrected it and we had a good laugh and I didn't tell him what he said until after she was long gone.
But. So there you go, Graham. It could have gone a whole lot worse. Yeah. Beaten some poor woman on the face on the train and then asked a question of that calibre. God, that's not good at all. But thank you, Graham, for sharing your awkward story. I'm sure the people in the office love that story. I love the way that's become your phrase, Genki desu ka. Nice one. Thank you for sharing that with us. Right, so on to your experiences in Japan, Norm. Last week we talked about why you moved to Japan, your experiences with the shamisen, your journey as a YouTuber. Now I thought we'd draw upon your experiences a bit. And I've got six questions lined up, and I thought we could pry into all different areas. And the first one is about places you'd recommend. What are six places you'd recommend people to visit in Japan? You've travelled the country pretty extensively, from top to bottom, and have quite a lot of experiences. So what are your kind of six places you'd recommend folks to visit?
Yeah. I'm going to group two big ones right up at the top. The obvious ones, just get them out of the way. Tokyo and Kyoto, right out of the top. I think that they're essentials to be able to feel feel Tokyo, feel Kyoto, have that experience.
Well, you've got to go. I mean,
You've got to.
And those are the two locations that most folks coming to Japan will have. Any particular districts in Tokyo and Kyoto then?
Tokyo, that really comes down to person. A lot of people, for example, Tokyo, love the west side, the Shinjuku, the Shibuya, all of that. When I first came to Japan, that was my jam. Loved it. But I've actually fallen in love with the east side.
And you used to live in that area, right?
Yeah, Asakusa.
Right.
I love the Asakusa Ueno. I love the Sumida River. I just love that whole zone, the Akihabara, that whole space. Oh, love it. As for Kyoto, if you're short on time, the area immediately around the station has so much that you can do within walking distance, or even rent a bicycle and do double.
Yeah, I've never ridden a bicycle in Kyoto. I'd love, actually, no, that's not true. I did for Journey Across Japan, but we didn't get to really enjoy it as much as I'd like. But I think that could be a really nice experience.
There's a lot of like 500 yen, 1000 yen set like cycle rentals, and they're just, it really opens up the city.
Absolutely. That was the perfect size. And because Kyoto is flat.
Yeah.
For that, most of it is flat anyway. It's quite an easy place to cycle around, I imagine. Okay, so Tokyo and Kyoto.
That would be,
number one. What about the second place?
Okay, I would say I'll work. That'll be like the bottom of my list, and I'll work up to probably the top-ish. Next, I would say get to the very bottom of Honshu Island and check out Shimonoseki. You've been
Shimonoseki.
There.
Yes, I went there with Ryotaro. We made a video about fugu, you know, the poisonous blowfish, and it was pretty tasty. And that area, Shimonoseki in Yamaguchi Prefecture, is famous for it. It's like the number one fugu spot in Japan. Why? That's an interesting choice, though. I don't think I've ever heard anyone recommend Shimonoseki. Why there?
Well, I've got a variety of reasons. I spent some time there when I first came to Japan. There's a mountain there called Hinoyama, which to me was beautiful because you can climb up. And I think a lot of people don't realize Shimonoseki is the last city at the end of Honshu. So I think it's the Kanmon Strait divides Honshu and Kyushu.
Yes. Yeah.
And you can climb up this mountain and you can see the edge shape of Kyushu and you can see the boats going through that strait. You can also... I think you've gone underneath the bridge as well.
I did.
Go between the two sides.
So on Journey Across Japan, I think we did a video called "How Much Japanese Can You Learn in a Day?" or something. Mm. My co-rider, my friend Ellen, she had to see how much she could learn. I think she learned like 20, 30 words. Quite impressive, actually. But yeah, there's a tunnel that goes from Honshu to Kyushu, and we wanted to cycle through it, but you have to walk with your bike. Yep. So I was looking forward to that little tunnel, but it became quite unpleasant walking with the bike, and you can see that in the video. But there's just near there, though, there is a really bloody good fish market, one of my favourites in Japan. And when I went there with Ryotaro, one of his friends' mum worked at the market and had this stall where you could buy like individual pieces of sushi for like 200 yen. Really good food. Have you been to the market?
Yeah, I've been to the market. It's actually... one of my favorite places to get breakfast. So fugu is known for being a rather expensive food.
It is, yeah.
But you can get a fugu breakfast set at that market. Well, you could in 2005 for 700 yen.
Jesus.
So it's probably
cheap.
Still under 1,000 yen, I would assume. But just a really spectacular place. And Shimonoseki is a great base for traveling out to other places. You can get down to Kyushu very easily. You can go down to Fukuoka. You can go out to Hiroshima. You can go all over the place. In fact, there's even a boat that will take you from Shimonoseki to Busan in Korea.
Wow.
Should you be so inclined.
That's pretty cool. That's a really interesting point. I think, for those of you that want to try fugu, in particular, Shimonoseki can't be beat. And the market in question is the Karato Ichiba market. One of the, I think on your list, you can actually check that out on Abroad Japan. Got a video there. All right, number three. Where'd you recommend next?
I would say head straight down south into Oita area.
Oita, in Kyushu.
In Kyushu. You can go anywhere in Oita. You can go anywhere, like... you can't go wrong. I personally love driving through the mountainous areas in Yufuin area. It almost doesn't even look like Japan. It's like you've suddenly stepped into like Iceland or something like that, or like the rolling green hills of Ireland, which I've never been to.
The rolling green hills of Ireland that you've never been to.
Yeah.
I know what you mean, though. Kyushu is a very odd place in terms of landscape. And I remember driving to Beppu, Japan's number one hot spring resort, which is in Oita, and driving through those mountains and being in awe. And they actually burn a lot of the trees, or they burn the grass or something on the side of the mountain, don't they, every year, I think. What's in terms of Oita, then?
It's, again, it's one of those places where if you don't have a lot of time, you can experience a lot of Japan. Like, let's use Beppu as a perfect example.
Right.
Beppu, you can experience a bit of the city. You can hit up an izakaya. Then within 15 minutes of that city, you could be up in the mountains. Or if you're not into the mountains or you just want a bit of a change, within 15 minutes of that city, you could be down at the ocean. You could do city, ocean, mountains, all within like half an hour of each other. There's everything from the onsens to you can get buried in hot spring sand, and there's
the
great
dream.
Food and
who doesn't want to be buried in sand?
Still never done actually. On the side of the mountain.
I think for me though, the main selling point of Oita and is Beppu in the hot springs.
Yeah,
when you come over the mountain. And Beppu is kind of surrounded by mountains. You can see all the steam rising up from the city because there's just so many hot springs throughout. And so it looks kind of beautiful, right?
It does.
Yeah. So cool. Oita. Yeah. Nice one. Nice choice. Number three. On to number four.
I'm going to go ahead and we're going to skip like right across back onto the main island of Honshu at the very top of it the Tsugaru region.
Oh, Tsugaru,
which is
in
like
Aomori.
Aomori area, stuff like that. It's a very flat, plain style area, but with so much culture, food, music. There's just so much of like the Japan that we think of, like those, I can't even, my words aren't coming to me. When you think of those giant floats,
Festival floats.
Giant festival floats, and the words escape you. Tsugaru Shamisen, the music that I love.
Yeah, Tsugaru, the shamisen's from Tsugaru.
Yeah, right? So much culture, history, stories are born from that area, and you never run out of things to explore or people to meet, and everyone is so welcoming.
I think Aomori, whenever I speak to my good friend Ryotaro, and we've travelled to Aomori about 5 or 6 times, we both think that Aomori is the most kind of magical prefecture in Tohoku, of the 6 prefectures, right? And you've got, like, cider. You've got... I did a video there recently, it's coming out early next year, where we ate a bear. We ate a bear. It's pretty hardcore. I wonder how that'll do. But they've got too many bears there, apparently, so they have to cull them. with machine guns. And,
I don't know how to respond.
Poor old bears. But yeah, they eat bear there, historically. They've got some beautiful traditional inns. And it's a really magical place. Very snowy, though, in winter. If you like snow, go there in winter. If you don't, avoid it like the plague. But yeah, Tsugaru, really cool place. Number five,
I'm going to go a specific... space inside of an island I love, and I'm going to go specifically to Tokushima. Tokushima is in the island of Shikoku, and it's an area that I haven't really explored until this year, really, but it's got some spaces in it that are known as, like, Japan's unexplored zones, and it really feels like that.
I think Shikoku feels like the last frontier of Japan in some respects,
it really does.
Weird, because... It's nestled. It's kind of nestled in between Honshu and, like, big cities like Hiroshima, Okayama. They're kind of over the coastline, right? But then Shikoku itself, you don't really hear a great deal about Shikoku. And I love it. I've been there a few times. I love Matsuyama, one of my favourite cities. But I haven't been into the mountains like you have. And in fact, your number one video, the man who lives in an abandoned Japanese school and the Scarecrow Village, which we talked about last week. Your most successful videos, you filmed them in Tokushima?
Yeah, both Tokushima. And just, there's so much. I ended up going back last week to Tokushima and revisiting.
What were you doing there?
And the goal was experiences this time. So last time I was just exploring. This time I went back to do stuff. I did, like, forest adventures. I tried zip lines. I went around to some of the more touristy spots. I went from there down to Kochi, which is another fantastic area in Shikoku. But I've been to everywhere in Shikoku pretty much. But Tokushima especially feels like a zone for it's one of the places that it's a lot better if you have a car and you can drive around. There's so much to explore, so much exploration, and so much discovery to be made.
Is it at risk with the population going down? It's one of the prefectures that's experiencing the worst effects of the population, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd love to go down there. You've certainly done a good job selling it to me this year with your videos. All right, number six then.
Number six is just the entire island of Shikoku.
Shikoku,
in general.
The whole island.
The whole island.
Right.
All 4 prefectures. In Shikoku, so it's 4 countries. So it's got the 4 prefectures there. It's one of the areas that I skipped over in my first travel of Japan, where I went around the entire country. I went there for the first time a couple of years back, and then just ended up continually going back. And I spent a lot of that time originally in Matsuyama, and then I'd branch out to, like, Kochi and whatnot.
What kind of food is the standout food of Shikoku?
When I think standout food of Shikoku, my mind goes instantly to Kochi, to the katsuo.
Oh, the fish.
The fish,
yeah.
And you think of that. Have you been to the market?
I've not been to Kochi.
There's a Hiroe Ichiba. It's got a market with... it's basically just an indoor food market with all these different food vendors. And they have this giant glass window where they're just throwing hay on the fire and they're roasting the fish, and the flames are like 2 meters tall.
So they smoke the fish.
Yeah.
Wow,
it's
that's
quite
really
the thing to see right there.
A lot of the time I get listeners and viewers telling me to go to Shikoku and do the pilgrimage. I think it's like 100. How many shrines are there? 100 temples or something.
It's like 30 some odd, 40 some odd, 200. I don't know.
Seems pretty hardcore.
Numbers. Yeah.
I think you should do it because I don't think I could. So there you go. Those Norm's 6 places he recommends. Kyoto, Tokyo, Shimonoseki in Yamaguchi, Tokushima in Shikoku, the whole of Shikoku.
The whole of Shikoku.
Oita Prefecture in Kyushu, in particular Beppu, and Tsugaru in Aomori's. Fantastic places there. Really nice kind of diverse list there to immerse yourselves in. And certainly, if you come in Japan for 3 weeks, you could probably visit all of those places.
Definitely, yeah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Join us for a very Clash of the Titles Christmas, because we're doing what every family does at this time of year. Arguing about which film is better. We've proof this pod is good for your elf, as Elf takes on Santa Claus the Movie.
With Santa Claus the Movie, for years, I couldn't walk past a slice of ham. Reaching for it like a grubby
street urchin.
Yes, I to God.
We're doing that festive thing of overindulging in sweet stuff. It's The Holiday versus Love Actually.
I've never seen women apologise so much for being women as in The Holiday.
And yes, they are Christmas movies. We've got Die Hard versus Lethal Weapon.
I'm so bored of that question, so let's flip it. Is Christmas a Die Hard movie?
That's Clash of the Titles this December. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Clash of the Titles is a Stakhanov production.
Merry Christmas!
Okay, on to some more questions.
Okay.
So you're from Canada, from Toronto.
Yeah.
Nice place. It's got a really tall building, CN Tower.
Yeah,
that's my knowledge of Toronto finished.
It was the tallest until the Skytree was built here in Tokyo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Bastards.
Buggers.
Damn them. What else is in Toronto that's good?
Wow, put me on the spot. Asking the real questions. I love the city for its food.
Food.
Which is something that, like, here in Tokyo, I don't do as much. I don't do a lot of food on the channel, to
poutine.
Be honest. Poutine, yes, absolutely. If you don't know what poutine is, Chris, you want to take it?
Somebody took some French fries and dumped a load of gravy on them.
I really shouldn't.
And cheese curd. It's good, though. It's good. The first time I had it, I was like, what is wrong with people in Canada? The second time I had it, I was like, people in Canada are geniuses. I think the first time I had it, it was really bad. Someone screwed up the cheese curd, but the second time, it was magical.
It's like sushi. It's
can you get it in Japan anywhere?
Yeah. There are a few places that make versions of it or attempted versions of it, but it's not the same.
What else does Canada have food-wise? Maple syrup?
Maple syrup is a big one.
Can you put maple syrup on poutine?
But you could.
That's the peak Canada, peak Canadian Canada dish, isn't it?
Some Canadian bacon on top of there as well.
Perfect.
Some Tim Hortons, just crumble up some Timbits on there, maybe a double-double.
You sold it to me. But what does Canada do better than Japan, do you think?
That's I try to live in a world where each country is kind of its own thing. So that's difficult for me, but I'd say one thing, I don't know if it's a thing that they do better, but you know how there's always something from another country you miss that you can't easily get. So there are just certain foods in volume, like I don't know, anything from going out for wing night, where you can get all the different wings for like 29 cents each, sitting down with beer, getting a plate of nachos, I don't know.
You could do that in Tokyo.
You can, but the thing that makes it great, and not everybody shares this view, but I think certain foods are good because they come in volume at a low price. I have no interest in expensive tacos. I want tacos that are borderline going to make me sick for an incredibly cheap price in a high volume. Same thing with pizza. I don't need the world's best pizza. I'm fine with really bad pizza, just a lot of it at a low price. And some foods for me are like that. And
When I asked this question, what does Canada do better than Japan, to Charlotte last month, she gave like a deep-seated cultural like example, and you've just gone, I miss discount chicken wings, like ridiculous.
I do, because Japan does so much so well, and as the world becomes slightly more international with things like Amazon and everything like that, I can access so much more of the things I couldn't access before in Canada.
What about culturally though? What does Canada do better than Japan? From a cultural sense, outside of discount chicken wings.
If I had to go with a really honest, like, deep cultural sense on what Canada offers that I have to search harder for in Japan but still exists, there's that native culture in Canada, the First Nations. There you have the ability to go out to Indian reservations. You can experience powwows. You can learn about that deep culture. There's a lot of that there, and it's really ingrained into the landscape of Canada itself. The government has given entire reservations to tribes and everything like that. I was lucky enough to grow up with quite a bit of that, and while Japan does have that, especially areas like Hokkaido with the Ainu and everything, it's not as prevalent.
They've kind of been a bit sidelined, haven't they?
Yeah. And so there is, and like it's one of those things that the deeper you go into the culture, the more interesting, the more beautiful, the music, the language, all of that. I really enjoy that side of things, but enjoying different music, language, cultures is one of the things that drew me to Japan in the first place.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
That's a deep answer, Norm.
That and
going from discount chicken wings to really deep endangered cultures, and very nice. All right. On the flip side, then, what does Japan do better than Canada? It's my third question to you.
What does Japan do better than Canada? I'm gonna. I don't want to go for a really obvious
discount
one.
Ramen.
Discount ramen. Like honestly, I feel it's really low hanging fruit.
Right.
But convenience stores.
Japan does yeah.
Convenience stores better than absolutely anywhere.
Well, I certainly miss that in the UK. Like the fact that you can just walk into a convenience store 24 hours of the day if you need something, no problem. In the UK, it's a bit more tricky to find a store that's open 24 hours like that.
And you can do everything. You can obviously print stuff out.
You can print things, that's magic.
Your Ghibli Museum tickets at a convenience store. You can have your Amazon delivered.
And pay for your flights. Yeah, absolutely. Convenience stores, I don't know why the UK doesn't have them.
I actually needed an extra battery while I was out in Kyoto filming a documentary like 2-3 weeks ago. And I Amazon primed a battery to a convenience store.
Like a camera battery. Like a
camera battery.
Oh, right.
And I could just go to a convenience store and pick it up the next day.
That's amazing.
Yeah, because I was changing hotels, so I didn't know exactly where I would be. So I just had it sent directly to the convenience store that I knew would be nearby.
Never thought about doing that.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's very much an option.
Life hacks with Norm. Get it on Amazon delivered to convenience stores. Amazon deliver at convenience stores. Japan does it better than Canada. That's a good answer there. Really cool. Okay, what about one experience? Let's turn to experiences you can have in Japan. What's one experience everyone coming to Japan should have? One thing.
Hands down, if you drink, then I'd say drinking. If you don't drink, then I'd say a meal with a local. Absolutely.
Okay.
Go into a restaurant. Like, try to. Chances are, if you look at somebody and smile and they make eye contact, then they're comfortable to speak to you. The people who won't want to speak with you won't make eye contact. Chances are, if they make good eye contact first, they might even speak English if you're not comfortable with your Japanese. That's actually a trick that I've always used. If before my Japanese was comfortable, if someone made eye contact with me without me like searching it out, I would just be like, sorry, can you speak English?
It's a really good point. I mean, it's important to point out to listeners that in Japan, people don't make eye contact as much as in the West, right? Sorry. I've noticed that. It seems to be like some sort of traditional Japanese cultural aspect that eye contact is seen as being rude.
It's invasive to some people.
But if people look at you like that at a bar, then usually that means come over and I'll give you a free beer.
Yeah.
use that with caution. It might mean I hate this foreigner, why are they in the bar? But no, that's a really good point. Dining, eating, drinking with a local.
Yeah.
And a lot of the most kind of the stories and experiences we hear from listeners, from you guys, are folks that have actually just gone to an izakaya, gone to a bar or restaurant, and someone's gone, oh, where are you from? Oh, wow, cool, and started chatting. And there's
avoid
no doubt.
The tables, go for the counter seats.
Counters, yes.
There's almost always a counter seat in bars and izakayas, and that's where you're going to make friends.
100%.
Yeah.
Counter seats.
I met a gentleman out in Kochi just last week.
Oh, wow.
Oh, boy. And he's got the world's craziest life story. This gentleman was like, oh, I was in New York for a bunch of years, and then I went to Dubai and I asked to take a picture with this woman, and the police got really offended and they grabbed me, and I accidentally hit an officer. And
oh,
I
God.
Spent 2 years in a Dubai prison.
Whoa.
And then I wasn't allowed back into the States, so I had to give up all my stuff, and I traveled Southeast Asia, and then I came back to Japan and bought a motorcycle and crashed it, and then spent 3 months in a Japanese prison.
Why didn't you make a documentary on this guy?
I was just sitting there listening. I was like, wow.
Did you get his business card or anything?
Yeah, we're in contact.
You've got to go and like, interview him.
He's got dreadlocks. He's probably like 75 years old.
No.
He's got dreadlocks and is covered in sleeves of tattoos.
Oh,
and,
my Lord.
Yeah, he's got the tiny little John Lennon glasses.
He makes Natsuki sound boring. I mean, this is the coolest man in Japan. I've never heard of anyone quite like that. Go and interview him. Film him. Make the film we deserve.
There we go. So,
dreadlock Japanese 75-year-old serial offender who's lived in Dubai prisons.
Yeah,
incredible. Yeah. But yeah, great point there. One experience everyone should have: eating, dining, drinking with a local, which you can do just by wandering in.
Yeah.
There are some services, I think, we can do that. What's the one in Tokyo that everyone always goes on about? There's like, a one in Tokyo. It's all like the influences
like
are always
tour or
yeah,
something?
Like some sort of bar hopping.
Okay. There's like I'd say one of my favorite places. Like if you're in Tokyo and you want to do it, there's a Rastafarian bar in Asakusa.
Oh wow!
Called
That's
Rastaman's
cool.
Cafe, and the owner is such an outgoing person that you cannot walk by the bar and have him standing outside without becoming friends with him.
That's so cool.
He attracts that type of customer. So when you go there, you end up just speaking to everyone.
What's the bar again?
I think it's called Rastaman's Cafe, and it's right behind Kaminarimon in Asakusa.
Oh wow!
It's like a 2-minute walk from it.
I imagine he gets a lot of tourists passing through there.
Right near that street that used to have the beautiful view, but then got blocked by the hotel.
The beautiful view of the Skytree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So. Cool point though. But yeah, there are bar hopping tools. I think Magical Trip is the one I'm thinking
something
about.
Something like that.
But no, do if you are like somebody who's a bit on the fence about just chatting with strangers, just book yourself onto a bar hopping tour.
Mm.
And just type it into Google, and there's quite a lot in Tokyo in particular. Tokyo and Kyoto, they're pretty popular. Okay, cool. What is question 5? What's one thing everyone coming to Japan should avoid doing? The kind of the flip side to that. Either a tourist trap or something.
This is deep thought mode. There's a lot of stuff that you'd recommend like avoiding. Like, for example, if somebody approaches you up on the street and is like, come into our bar, especially in an area like Shinjuku or Roppongi, under no circumstances, no matter how uncomfortable you are saying no, under no circumstances should you do that.
It's good that you should bring that up. We've covered that a lot on the podcast. A lot of our listeners, we've had stories of people who came here on their honeymoon and lost like $5,000.
Yep. So very possible.
Either this year, earlier this year, or last year, there was a couple that came to Japan on their honeymoon and had it ruined. And they got back to the UK or the US and they had like loads of debt. Just because they'd gone in, they'd had their drinks spiked, their credit cards were taken. And they just emptied it, basically. Yep. So, yeah, that's a really good point. Definitely avoid anyone telling you to go in a bar in Roppongi, Shinjuku, Shibuya, anywhere.
If you meet somebody in a bar, it's great to drink with them. It's great to have a good time. But if somebody, to this date, just as a general rule, if you meet somebody, even if they just come off like a really friendly person, and they're like, yo, let's go drinking together, right? If I don't choose the place... then no, or chances are I just won't go because the risk is just too high.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important point there for any of you coming to Tokyo in particular. Okay. And finally, let's turn to your own memories in Japan. You've done so many bloody things. What is one of your best memories from your time living in Japan? Like an achievement, a place, a moment, something that really stands out from your decade-long adventures in Japan?
Feels like a cop-out to be like, there are too many, but there really, really are.
I mean, the easiest one is Journey Across Japan, Escape to Fiji.
Oh, yeah, that's easily number one from that week. I would have to say, we talked, I think in the last episode we talked a bit about my journey to becoming the apprentice of the Yoshida brothers.
Mm.
And I would say that entire like 2-3 year experience culminating in actually getting a yes from them finally, and all the roadblocks and no's and everything that I got along the way, was by far one of my favorite experiences. There was every type of challenge you could imagine, from time management to cultural learning to language to everything in between. Mm. And everything that's come from that, like we've been on TV together several times. We've traveled together, you name it. And that journey gave birth to everything I have now.
Becoming a professional shamisen player who's played with Japan's number one shamisen artists.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good experience, to be fair. it's better than anything I can think of. I climbed a mountain once. It was good. Like, that's my memory. I don't have anything like that, really. No. But that's fantastic. And a good story there of persistency. Mm. Being persistent. Keep going. Never give up your dreams.
Mm.
So that's what we can take away from Norm.
Very deep.
And I'm not being sarcastic for once either, yeah. And discount chicken wings
exactly.
from Toronto. We now turn our attention to the fax machine, where we're going to hear some of your stories and questions. We got one from Hamish. He says, hello, Chris and Pete. I'm Hamish from Adelaide, Australia, or should I say Hamish from Japan. I recently arrived in Japan for the JET programme, and I'm writing because myself and the other assistant language participants are in 2 weeks of quarantine at a hotel near Tokyo, and I would like to ask you this extremely important question. What do you both recommend in order for us to help pass the time with Japan-related activities? For obvious reasons, they must be activities that can be done in a roughly 15-metre square space. You guys might want to do some shameless promotion for the podcast here. Thank you for staying on the airwaves and all the best. P.S. My placement is in Nara, if you guys were wondering. Mm. Wow, that's pretty cool. But yeah. God, 2 weeks in a hotel in Tokyo.
Yep.
I wonder how that would feel. Would it feel like really long? Would it go really quick?
I feel like it would feel like an eternity because Tokyo is right there.
That would be torture.
it is right there. And you're just like, no, I'm just going to look at it from the window.
I wonder what hotel Hamish is in. I hope it's a decent hotel. Yeah. Although 15 meter square room, that means it's probably an upper hotel. Good God, that's tiny.
The window
50 meters square
to another building.
Well, like that's insanely small. Good God, Hamish, how are you not going insane?
I would be.
I mean, at least you got Japan on your doorstep. At least you got kind of the excitement to get you through.
Smell it.
Can smell Japan out the windows, but you can't go there. Crikey. Wow. What productive things can Hamish do while he's there, apart from watch Abroad in Japan weekdays on Sunday?
Well, that's one that comes to my mind is obviously origami.
Origami.
Become the master.
Origami and chicken wings.
Become the origami
the
master.
The Len story. I mean, you know what? If it were me, I would study Japanese. I'd crack out a textbook or an app and just study.
Just keep calling the front desk.
Yeah. Chat to the staff. Do study something. Like, my biggest regret when I kicked off my teaching career was I didn't know any Japanese, really. And the first few weeks of studying make the most impact because you learn all the key phrases and words you need to get by. So if your Japanese is non-existent or not very good, then definitely study some Japanese, Hamish. Use something. Use an app like Human Japanese, my favourite. Genki, I suppose you can't really get a textbook, so that's out of the question. But get like an app like Human Japanese, Tai Kim's Grammar Guide, another good one. Memorize is good. Yeah, I suppose you didn't do any.
I'm like sitting here just nodding along to these textbooks. Another one is I think that English teaching for some people is like just the best job. It's the most suited job. Like they really enjoy it, and for others, it's a really good foot in the door. Like the idea of when you arrive, also having the idea of what you might want to do next. Like if there's a life after English teaching, right? What do you want to start learning now? What skills do you want to start building so that when that section of your life comes to an end, you can transition into something else? It can be a great foot in the door for you to.
So when you moved to Japan, you already had a rough idea that I'm going to be a pro at shamisen.
I had no clue.
Okay.
So it just happened.
What about YouTube? Again, same
again, like that. That was kind of thrown on me.
See, I will say that I did have a plan for YouTube at the back of my mind. I didn't know it would kick off or be successful, but I kind of thought, well, I'm going to make the YouTube channel that I wanted to watch before I came to Japan. So that's my advice to you, Hamish. Plan out a YouTube empire. Start get a bit of paper and map out what you want the next few years to look like. Study some Japanese and, of course, watch Abroad in Japan. Watch Journey Across Japan again. Do that
and enjoy Nara.
And enjoy Nara. Yeah, you're very lucky. You were there like 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, right before going to shoot that documentary that we were talking about before. I spent an entire day there, just watered deer everywhere.
You fed an awful lot of deer that day.
Yeah, just lots of leaves and nuts from the trees.
But no, Nara is a fantastic place, the old ancient capital, and you can visit Kyoto and Osaka on weekends outside of work. But good luck with the JET programme, Hamish. Good luck in Nara, and good luck in the next couple of weeks in the damn hotel. I hope it's not too stressful. I'm sure you'll look back and it'll be a funny story one day. And definitely do the origami. What do we got? Jordan from Seattle.
To start off, thanks for all your hard working and consistently releasing new episodes twice a week during the pandemic. They're a great joy to listen to on my lunch break. I have been enjoying the new series of Journey Across Japan, and the first episode reminded me of something from my trip to Osaka in 2019. During our approach to Kansai International Airport, I saw a large white statue out the window of the plane, which turned out to be the world peace giant Kannon in Awaji Island. Later in the week, while riding the Tenpozan Ferris wheel in Osaka, I spotted a large and interesting domed structure that seemed to be floating in the water of the bay, which turned out to be the Osaka Maritime Museum. I was surprised to learn that both structures are abandoned and have been for many years. Compared to the abandoned Love Hotel and the roadside shop that you recently featured, it seems odd to me that these rather large and impressive structures have been allowed to fall into disrepair. Apparently, the Kannon statue is kind of crap compared to the one located near you in Sendai, but the Maritime Museum is a beautiful building that won a structural engineering award. There are many other large and conspicuous buildings in Japan that have been similarly abandoned. Or, is that a question? Are there many other large and conspicuous buildings in Japan that have been similarly abandoned? Or did I happen to spot two rare examples on my trip? Best regards, Jordan from Seattle.
Interesting. So the giant Kannon statue, like a Daikannon, it's just these big kind of Buddhist figures they have. Buddhist
statue. Drove by it the other week, actually.
Yeah, and Sendai's got one of the tallest in Japan. I think it was the sixth tallest statue in the world at one point, about 100 meters. Incredible structure. But this one's abandoned. And the Osaka Maritime Museum, which I've looked up, and it's this beautiful-looking dome that was built in, like, 1998, and they closed it in 2013.
Huh.
And it's a really good point that these aren't two rare examples, Jordan. There are a lot of abandoned things in Japan, and that is because I think a lot of owners just don't want to go through all the regulations and expenses of knocking down these buildings and structures. What have you found over the years, Norm?
Oh, everything. Actually, I'm shocked right now because I've driven by this Kannon statue.
Oh, really?
That you're talking about twice in the past 3 months.
And what did it look like?
It's big.
Is it run down?
Really clean. It's not run down whatsoever. So I'm surprised to find out that I've driven by an abandoned building twice and didn't check it out.
Right? It's very un-norm-like.
Yeah, kind of not pleased. But there's been everything from abandoned bridges, and there's a lot of abandoned structures, like buildings, shrines, hotels, shrines where in the mountains. We found one last year that clearly nobody had been to in an incredible amount of time because we couldn't walk more than a meter without cobwebs.
Mm.
Even in a giant forested area, just spiderwebs everywhere. God. Yeah.
Haikyuu are common because, well, like I just said, it's quite expensive to get rid of these things. But also in the 1980s and early 90s, Japan had a bit of an economic boom and people had a little bit too much money to spend. And they did build these elaborate structures, these Daikannon statues, often for tax reasons, like the one in Sendai. And we went to the Love Hotel on the first day of journey across Japan, didn't we? And that was pretty eerie. I think that had been abandoned for 7 or 8 years.
It looked like at least that. Every window was smashed.
Yeah, that was chilling.
Bats when we first got
bats,
in there.
Bats, yeah, Natsuki dealt with those. There's so many. If you go into the countryside, you never know what you're going to find. And I think both Norm and I are kind of interested in that side of Japan. There's a lot of places to explore. Just be careful where you do go, because obviously it can be difficult to get into some of these places. And yeah, it's a really interesting aspect of going out into the countryside, right?
Yeah, and unfortunately, a lot of them recently are starting to be purchased by NPOs. And there are abandoned theme parks, there are abandoned hotels. I had at least 4 on the list for this year, which within 2020 had been purchased by an NPO, and then they've blocked it off or put up cameras inside.
What are they going to do with it? Just knock it down?
They may knock it down. They may turn it into something else. Yeah, there are some really, really nice ones that just are no longer accessible.
I wonder why they closed the Maritime Museum. But thank you, Jordan, for sharing those stories. And I hope you can go out and discover some more places on your next travels to Japan. Got one from Brandon from Iowa. In the US. Hello, Chris and Pete. I always love the podcast and hearing what crazy adventures your listeners get up to in Japan. Watching Chris finally see Mount Fuji in his latest YouTube video was like being a proud dad watching his son graduate high school. Congratulations, Chris. He finally did it. Hey. Question, though. A few podcasts ago, I thought I heard Chris mention a road trip across Japan would now be a yearly adventure. Is this true, or was that misspoken? Thank you for the amazing podcast and keeping my dog walks my dog's walks entertaining. Brandon from Iowa. And, of course, you were there, Norm, when we saw Mount Fuji, given you were the cameraman for Journey Across Japan, Escape to Fuji. How did you feel?
It was real. The excitement was so real.
Just turning the corner in the car and seeing Fuji over the mountain was just like, what?
I thought you were going to jump out of the car as it was moving down. Like, it just, honestly, how can I put it? We weren't expecting it. So it was a very unexpected moment.
Just such a crap week in terms of weather. And then, bang, blue skies. And, it was
like
good.
An hour before, we were at the pagoda, and it was nothing but overcast and grey skies. And then...
And in the final episode coming out, the last episode of Journey Across Japan, we had a really good view of the mountain in the morning on the beach, didn't we? So there's that to look forward to. But, yeah, as for a yearly adventure, absolutely. I really enjoyed producing Journey Across Japan, Escape to Fuji. We had a really great team. Myself, Joey, Norm, of course, Ian, the producer. We had Natsuki. He was a breath of fresh air. I think my favourite episodes were the ones with Natsuki because he added a really funny extra kind of dimension to things. Do you have a personal favourite of the episodes?
Breath of fresh larva. the realness of the moment of Natsuki eating the larva and not being able to keep it down.
Oh, God, that was horrible. He was so funny. Like, I've already started talking to everybody from the last Journey Across Japan, and we're looking at doing another one early next year, which I hope you'll come back for as well, Norm.
Love to.
And so, yeah, we are looking at doing it again. All best things come in trilogies, so we need one last trilogy for Journey Across Japan. And there's still a lot of Japan that we have yet to explore. And we're looking at getting Natsuki along for the whole week next time around.
Really,
so
nice.
That could be really fun. Going even bigger and better than this season. But that is very early stages, but there'll be more details on that coming out in the next few months. So something to look forward to in 2021, along with the recovery of the entire world, we hope. Thank God. But thank you for joining us, though, Norm.
Not a problem.
It's been a lot of fun these last two episodes, and I'm sure we'll see you again soon. Do check out Norm and his channel, Tokyo Lens, on YouTube. Literally just Tokyo Lens.
Yeah.
He loves his cameras. And he's got a podcast, also Tokyo Lens. And he's also got a video coming out this weekend.
Yeah, a documentary where I interviewed every local who was willing to speak to me in Kyoto.
Harassing the locals of Kyoto.
They were super pleasant. The first one actually came up to us, which is what kind of inspired it. And we just asked them what they thought about how empty Kyoto has been.
Of course, because Kyoto, obviously, tourist hotspot in Japan, has had no tourists this year.
Yep.
And so you went around and asked people kind of like how they feel about that.
Yeah,
it's interesting because with Kyoto, we've often documented on this podcast as well, like the locals see the whole thing as a double-edged sword. Like, tourists make the economy, like, have done wonders for the economy of Kyoto, but it's also been a problem having so many, and it's kind of ruined Kyoto a bit, many people would argue. But now all the tourists have gone. Did you find they want them back?
I found that the each person kind of had their own story, their own reaction, which was very unique. I met one woman who lives on Fushimi-nari. She was born and raised there.
In between the
shows. Survived through the war.
Wow.
Just incredible. And she actually said, she's like, this is a place of prayer. While we're happy to have visitors, there's a limit to how much these little narrow roads and stairways can handle, and there have been times where it's been very dangerous just because of the volume of people.
I think tourism is good for Kyoto, but you've got like bus after bus load of tourists coming off, and just, you know, I don't know, it needs to be regulated better or managed a bit better, I think. But it's good to hear they want the tourists back.
Yep.
And you can check out Norm's video this weekend on Tokyo Lens. I think it's going to be a good one from what I've seen and heard. But for now, guys, keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back on Wednesday. We'll be rejoined by Pete, see what he's been up to the last week on his little break and his little holiday. But for now, guys, enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we'll see you then. Have a good one.
Take care.
was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.